Hi, and welcome to Undisclosed. Today, we're bringing you a special update on the Adnan Syed case. My name is Rabia Chaudhary. I'm an attorney and author, and I'm here with my colleagues, Susan Simpson and Colin Miller.
Hi, this is Susan Simpson. I'm an attorney in Washington, D.C., and I blog at The View from LL2.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog.
Those of you who follow Adnan's story might have noticed there have been some recent legal developments in the case, and we wanted to do an update episode letting you know the current status of the case and what to expect in the near future. But let's start by reorienting you regarding the status of his case and what's been happening in the last couple of years. Now, almost 2 years ago, on June 30th, 2016, Judge Martin Welch of the Baltimore City Circuit Court entered an order and opinion that granted Adnan a new trial.
The conviction is vacated, so think of it as the conviction is erased. It's gone. He's not, as of this day, he's not convicted anymore. So if the state were to retry him, essentially, we would be starting from scratch. I mean, the whole trial could potentially start again.
Judge Welch based his ruling on the cell tower evidence and not the evidence connected to alibi witness Asia McClain.
So he denied the Asia McClain issue and granted it on the cell tower issue.
Specifically, Judge Welch found that the crux of the state's case against Adnan was the incoming calls to his cell phone that pinged the tower covering Lincoln Park and the surrounding areas at 7:09 and 7:16 p.m. on the day that Heyman Lee disappeared. Judge Welch found that trial attorney Christina Gutierrez provided ineffective assistance of counsel based on failing to cross-examine the state's cell tower expert over an AT&T disclaimer which stated that incoming calls were not reliable for determining location status. Meanwhile, Judge Welch also found that Adnan had established the first but not the second prong of the ineffective assistance of counsel test when it came to his claim that Gutierrez was ineffective based upon failing to contact the alibi witness, again, Asia McClain. Judge Welch found that this failure to contact her satisfied the, quote, deficient performance prong, but didn't rise to the level of prejudice. Again, because he said that the crux of the state's case was the Lincoln Park pings and not the timeline of the crime itself that Asia McClain would have contradicted. But the cell tower claim was enough to get Adnan a new trial. However, his attorney, Justin Brown, cautioned at the time that we were just at the start of a very long process.
I will curb my enthusiasm because there's still a lot more fighting to go. He's still not out of jail. And as I said, after the post-conviction hearing, we're going to keep fighting until he's out of jail. So we've made a lot of progress, but we're still not there.
The next step in the process was the state's appeal to the Court of Special Appeals of Maryland, which is Maryland's intermediate appellate court. Oral arguments were held on June 8, 2017, before Chief Judge Patrick Woodard, Judge Alexander Wright, and Judge Catherine Grafe.
Our cases today are consolidated cases of Adnan Syed versus the State of Maryland, case number 2519.
About 10 months later, on March 29, 2018, the Court of Special Appeals of Maryland affirmed or upheld Judge Welch's overall ruling, but based upon inverted reasoning.
We won on the alibi issue. And the other issue, the cell tower issue, was reversed. So at the circuit court, we had won the cell tower issue and lost the alibi issue, but it was essentially a flip-flop. The Court of Special Appeals reversed the circuit court on both issues.
Specifically, two of the three judges in the Court of Special Appeals found that Christina Gutierrez's failure to contact Asia McClain was ineffective assistance of counsel. According to these judges, quote, if McClain's testimony had been presented to the jury, it would have altered the entire evidentiary picture because her testimony would have placed Syed at the Woodlawn Public Library at the time the state claimed that Syed murdered Hay. Such testimony would have directly contradicted the state's theory of when Syed had the opportunity and did murder Hay. Meanwhile, Judge Grafe entered a dissenting opinion, concluding there could have been strategic reasons justifying Christina Gutierrez's failure to contact Asia McClain.
Finally, all three judges agreed that Adnan had waived his ineffective assistance of counsel claim with regard to the cell tower evidence. These judges acknowledged that the Court of Appeals of Maryland held in Curtis v. State that the right to effective assistance of counsel is a fundamental right, and that the failure to claim an effective assistance of counsel in a first post-conviction review petition does not mean that the issue is waived unless there is what's known as a knowing and intelligent waiver by the defendant. But the court found that the Curtis case only applies in cases in which the defendant makes no claim of ineffective assistance of counsel in his first PCR petition, and does not apply in cases in which the defendant claims ineffective assistance in his first PCR petition, and then claims ineffective assistance on different grounds in a later second PCR petition. And because Adnan claimed ineffective assistance in connection with the Asia alibi in his very first PCR petition, it meant that he couldn't claim ineffective assistance in connection with the cell tower evidence in his second PCR petition. But the alibi claim, the Asia claim, was enough to affirm Judge Welch's decision to grant Adnan a new trial. And Justin Brown was cautiously hopeful that after that, the state wouldn't appeal again.
The good thing is we won this appeal. It's possible that the state could try to appeal again. We hope that they don't do that. We hope that they will come to the conclusion that this has gone on for long enough, and if anything else is going to happen with this case, let's retry it again. Let's take it to a jury in Baltimore City and let them decide whether Adnan Syed is guilty or innocent.
But any such hopes were dashed on May 14th, 2018, because on that day, the state went ahead and filed a petition for writ of cert with the Court of Appeals of Maryland, which is Maryland State's Supreme Court. Now, breaking that down, the Court of Appeals doesn't have to hear the state's appeal. It could decide that it's fine with the opinion by the Court of Special Appeals, and the state would be, well, they'd be out of appeals in the state of Maryland. And then, barring the extremely unlikely possibility that the U.S. Supreme Court allowed the state to appeal, that would be it. Adnan's convictions would be erased, and it would either be a new trial, the state dropping the case, or a plea bargain. In essence, a petition for writ of certiorari, or a cert petition, is a state asking the Court of Appeals for a third bite of the apple. It's the state saying, look, we know we've lost twice, but we really think you should give this case a third look. And as you might expect, the Court of Appeals rarely takes the bait. According to the most recent data, Maryland's highest court only grants cert or agrees to hear appeals in 13% of criminal cases, which means there's an 87% chance that the state doesn't get to appeal in Adnan's case. But there is a caveat, and it's a huge one. Colin researched the 10 most recent cases from 2002 to 2016, in which there were reported criminal cases in the Court of Special Appeals with dissenting opinions, like in Adnan's case. And in 8 out of 10 of those cases, the Court of Appeals granted cert and actually heard the appeal. So, based on these numbers, there is an 80% chance that the court will grant cert and hear the state's appeal. We've got some exciting news for our listeners from one of our favorite sponsors. Blue Apron is teaming up with best-selling cookbook author Chrissy Teigen to bring you some of her favorite recipes to make at home. Get ready for 6 weeks of wildly fun, flavorful cooking featuring recipes like garlic and soy glazed shrimp with charred broccoli and hot green pepper sauce and sesame chicken noodles with bok choy. Did we mention you don't have to step a foot in the grocery store to make it? That's because Blue Apron delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door that can be cooked in under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. And they're so flexible because Blue Apron offers 12 new recipes each week, and customers can pick 2, 3, or 4 recipes based on what fits your own schedule. Blue Apron only uses the highest quality ingredients. They send only non-GMO ingredients. So check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals for free at blueapron.com/undisclosed. That's blueapron.com/undisclosed to get your first 3 meals completely free. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
So when and how is the Court of Appeals of Maryland likely to rule? Based on history, we can expect a decision on whether to grant cert sometime in July or August. Presumably, Procedurally speaking, there are 7 justices on the Court of Appeals. Assuming that 2 or more of those justices don't recuse themselves, it takes 3 yes votes to grant cert. So if 3 justices want to hear the state's appeal and 4 don't, cert is granted and the appeal will be heard. And of course, the same applies if 4, 5, 6, or 7 justices want to hear the case. But if no justices want to hear the case, or if only 1 or 2 want to hear the case, cert is denied, and again, the state would be out of appeals in the state of Maryland and would be left with a Hail Mary to the United States Supreme Court. So what goes into the decision over whether to grant cert? You might expect the primary consideration to be whether the lower court got it wrong, but it's actually something else. As the Court of Appeals of Maryland has noted on several occasions,
certiorari is reserved for issues of, quote, public importance. Certiorari is generally denied where the questions presented, the analysis, and the outcome are wholly unremarkable and of interest solely to the litigants.
As you might expect, then, in its cert petition, the state claimed that the Court of Special Appeals broke new ground in ruling that Christina Gutierrez was ineffective based on failing to contact alibi witness Asia McLean. According to the state's petition,
the Court of Special Appeals has introduced specific constitutional obligations with potentially far-reaching consequences that are unmoored from prevailing Sixth Amendment law. The new requirement implicates the scope of defense counsel's Sixth Amendment obligations to investigate specific avenues that are different from and potentially incompatible with other potential defenses, threatening to dramatically broaden the work required by the Constitution of defense counsel and stripping them of the discretion and presumption of reasonableness with respect to which leads they pursue and which they forego.
And as you might equally expect, in its answer filed on May 29th, the defense tried to downplay the significance of the lower court's ruling. According to the defense's answer,
that holding, as to Saeed's particular facts, does not, as the state suggests, impose some sweeping burden on defense attorneys. Much less is the burden a new one. Counsel's duty to investigate is triggered once a defendant provides the information necessary to identify a witness and to suggest that the witness testimony could provide the defendant with an alibi. These conditions will depend on the specific circumstances of each case. Here, Syed triggered this duty when he gave trial counsel letters that offered multiple ways of contacting McLean and stated that McLean was with Syed when the murder supposedly occurred. Nor did the Court of Special Appeals analysis end there. Upon finding that counsel had failed to contact McLean, it still asked, quote, whether defense counsel's failure was deficient performance under the objective standard of a reasonably competent attorney acting under prevailing norms.
So, which of these arguments will justices find more convincing? It's important to note that the justices will take both arguments with a huge grain of salt. Why? Well, because the justices know that if they deny cert and the Court of Special Appeals opinion stands as it is, both sides would make the opposite argument if presented with a similar case in a few years down the line. The state would claim that the Syed holding was narrow and largely limited to its facts, while the defense, on the other hand, would assert that the Syed holding was broad and applicable to any case involving ineffective assistance and an alibi witness. So it's easy to see the Court of Appeals going either way on this. But it's important to note that a key opinion was handed down from another court in another state after the opinion was issued from the Court of Special Appeals in Anand's case. Here's a clip from CBS Evening News.
A notorious murder case that has taken 4 decades of twists and turns took another one today. A Connecticut court threw out the conviction of Michael Skakel, Ethel Kennedy's nephew, in the murder of a neighbor. Here's Tony DeCopel.
43 years ago, 15-year-old Martha Moxley, a popular teenager in Greenwich, Connecticut, was found beaten to death by someone wielding a golf club. Her then 15-year-old neighbor, Michael Skakel, was found guilty of murder, but today, a court vacated the conviction because of allegedly shoddy work by Skakel's lawyer, Mickey Sherman. Skakel and his supporters claim Sherman ignored a possible witness in his original trial 15 years ago, a witness who would have confirmed his alibi.
Specifically, on May 4, 2018, the Supreme Court of Connecticut threw out Michael Skakel's conviction, finding ineffective assistance of counsel based on Skakel's trial attorney failing to contact an alibi witness. In doing so, the court cited to the Court of Special Appeals opinion in Anand's case, finding that it fell in line with precedent from across the country regarding failure to contact alibi witnesses being ineffective assistance of counsel. The defense cited this opinion in its answer to argue that the Syed opinion didn't break any new ground, meaning that it's not in the public interest to grant cert.
In its cert petition, however, the state claimed that Adnan's case is different from this line of cases because it could have involved Christina Gutierrez deciding not to contact Asia McClain because she would have contradicted the, quote, alibi by routine defense she presented at trial.
Evaluating a decision not to contact a particular witness isn't just about making that call. It's about making that call versus the strategy that she was pursuing. We know from the record that Ms. Gutierrez and her defense team were very focused on developing an alibi. There's notes that say urgent about making a determination. There's extensive memoranda that show that they reached out to individuals on the track team. And there are treatises on how an alibi by routine can oftentimes be valuable, but it's rarely available. When you are trying to cover 2:15 to 8 o'clock, and your strategy decision is, I need to come up with a strategy that accounts for where Jay Wilds and Adnan Syed were the entire evening, and you've got an alibi by routine, school, track, mosque.
But don't you, if you could fill in that alibi by routine with some testimony as to specifics for that particular day, would that not be part of the defense?
Judge Wright, I think that's actually exactly the issue. Okay. Because this didn't reinforce that alibi. It was a deviation from it.
But there are two issues with this claim, one legal and one factual. Let's start with the legal issue, which is that there is no such thing as an alibi by routine. As a Court of Special Appeals noted in Adnan's case,
an alibi witness is a witness whose testimony must tend to prove that it was impossible or highly improbable that the defendant was at the scene of the crime when it was alleged to have occurred.
Someone who can testify that a defendant was at location A while the crime at issue was being committed at location B can do that. Someone who can merely testify that it was the defendant's routine to be at location A cannot. For instance, in one case, the Court of Appeals of Oregon noted that a defendant did not have to include his grandmother and his aunt in his alibi notice because they would merely testify about his daily routine and were not alibi witnesses for the day of the crime. And an appellate court in New Jersey reached the same conclusion in a case called State v. Nance, holding that the defendant's proffered testimony about what he did on a daily basis was not properly alibi, but habit or routine practice, which is admissible pursuant to the New Jersey Rule of Evidence 406. And this isn't simply a matter of semantics. If Gutierrez would have called Asia as an alibi witness, Adnan would have been entitled to an alibi instruction, which would have told the jury,
evidence has been introduced that the defendant was not there when the crime was committed. You should consider this evidence along with all other evidence in this case. Thus, in order to convict the defendant, the state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the crime was committed and the defendant committed it.
Conversely, if Adnan would have presented evidence of his routine between the end of school and the start of practice, he would not have been entitled to such an instruction.
But this takes us to the factual issue of the state's claim, which is that Gutierrez did not actually present evidence or testimony concerning Adnan's routine between the end of school and the start of track practice. That's a claim made by the defense in its answer to the state's cert petition, but it's also a conclusion made by the Court of Special Appeals. According to the court,
trial counsel said nothing about Syed's whereabouts from 2:15 p.m. to 2:35 p.m. on January 13th, the precise 20-minute time period during which the state argued to the jury that Syed murdered Hay.
In other words, the state is trying to create a false dichotomy, both legally and factually. They're claiming that Gutierrez had to choose between Asia's alibi and an alibi by routine. But one, there's no such thing as an alibi by routine. And two, Gutierrez presented no evidence or testimony about Adnan's routine between school and track practice. Support for Undisclosed comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply and understand fully so you can mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/undisclosed. That's rocketmortgage.com/undisclosed. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030.
Thank you.
This left the state with one final argument in its cert petition. It proceeded in three parts. First, that Anon had told a story to the police in Gutierrez that conflicted with Age's alibi. Second, that this makes Anon's case like the Broadnecks case out of Alabama, which was cited by Judge Grafe in her dissent, in which the trial counsel had been found not ineffective based on failing to contact an alibi witness who conflicted with what the defendant told the police and his attorney during his first trial. And third, that Gutierrez had pursued an alibi defense based on what Anon told the police and her, which makes Anon's case different from the cases cited by the majority, in which defense attorneys were found ineffective based on not pursuing any alibi defense. Starting with the first part, we again have to emphasize that even if Anon told the police and or Gutierrez that he remained on the school campus between school and track practice, this wouldn't really contradict Age's alibi. And that's because, again, the Woodlawn Public Library was right next to Woodlawn Public High School. And as Age and Anon's friend Krista has stated, students considered the public library to be the school library, because it's right there, next to the parking lot, and on school grounds, essentially. But that semantic issue aside, the defense in its answer again notes that the state's never actually proven the premise of this argument, that Anon told the police in the first place that he remained on the school campus until track practice. And the state's never presented any evidence to the contrary to prove that this would be a conflict at all with what Anon told the police. In its cert petition, the state throws out there, as a one-liner, similarly, the alibi at issue in the matter before the court contradicted what Syed told the police and his attorney. However, there's no factual site for that claim, nothing to indicate where in the record this fact comes from, and it's clear there is no factual basis for it. Meanwhile, the state's arguments about what Anon told Gutierrez are similar to what the state argued before the Court of Special Appeals.
You have to worry about the fact that that account is corroborated by a number of additional witnesses that you now know about in July. And at that stage, once you've received preliminary discovery and you ask your client what their account is and they don't mention it in July, when Mr. Syed's testimony was that it had fortified his memory as soon as he got the letters, even after that, if you look at the memoranda in the defense file where Mr. Syed is talking to his attorneys, Mr. Syed, in August 25th, provides a detailed recitation of what he had done that day during the school day. And there's a memorandum that encapsulates that, so that even in August, he did not mention the Woodlawn Public Library or Asia McClain.
Did he mention the library at all? A library?
He did not. He did not. And so when you have an advanced stage of the proceedings in July and August, and Ms. Gutierrez now has a lot of information, and your client is not telling you that that's where you were, other witnesses are not suggesting that that's where you were, to suggest that that's a rabbit hole worth going down, I think is beyond what Strickland requires.
Both at oral argument and in its cert petition, this argument is bizarre. Thiruvignaraja is arguing that Adnan didn't tell Gutierrez about Asia in July and August. And yet, we have the notes dated July 13th, which clearly indicate that Adnan told the defense team that Asia saw him after school at the library on the day that Hay disappeared. And while Thiru is correct that there's no mention of Asia in the August 25th memo prepared by her law clerk, he's also correct that this memo covers Adnan's school day. In other words, the period of time between the start of school at 7:45 a.m. and the end of school at 2:15 p.m. It thus makes complete sense that this memo wouldn't cover seeing Asia at the library, which happened after 2:15. On the other hand, we do know that there is a second, undated set of notes in the defense files in which Gutierrez wrote down that Adnan told her about seeing Asia at the library. This takes us to the second part of the state's argument, which is to analogize Adnan's case to the Broadnecks case out of Alabama. That's the case where a defendant told his attorney that he was at his job at the time of a double homicide. That same defendant later claimed after trial that his attorney was ineffective based on failure to investigate the alternate alibi that he was at a work release center at the time of the murders. In denying relief, the Alabama Court of Criminal Appeals pointed out the obvious. The defendant never told his trial counsel about any possible alibi at the work release center. And as the defense in Adnan's case points out, this is a fundamental difference because there are two references to Asia and her alibi in the defense file.
And there's actually one more very important difference between Broadnax and the Syed case, and one of the reasons why I find it so disingenuous for Grafe to have cited it in her decision and for the state to rely on it now. And that's that in Broadnax, the defendant actually had no support for his new alibi. On his post-conviction, he tried to claim that he had five alibi witnesses who could place him at a different place, and they argued at trial. But actually, when they testified at the PCR hearing, none of them backed that up. So not only is this a case where the attorney was told before trial of the alibi, the defendant actually had evidence at the PCR hearing to back it up, neither of which were present in Broadnax.
Finally, we have the third part of the state's argument, which is that Gutierrez investigated and presented an alibi defense, which makes Adnan's case different from other ineffective assistance of counsel cases in which no alibi defense was presented. Now, as we've noted, Gutierrez presented no alibi defense for the period during which the state claimed the murder occurred, and there are also serious doubts about her diligence in pursuing track and mosque alibi defenses. But it's at least true that Gutierrez did contact and call Adnan's track coach and his father, so there's at least some attempts at an alibi defense. And that is a factual difference from some of the cases cited by the Court of Appeals of Maryland in its key alibi case, In re Parish W. But there's at least one case cited in that opinion that the state can't seem to shake. In Montgomery v. Peterson, the defendant was charged with a string of burglaries on the same day in Illinois. Trial counsel actually contacted and called a dozen alibi witnesses at trial. He didn't, however, follow up on a 13th alibi witness. Specifically, the defendant gave him a receipt from Sears from the day of the burglaries and said it showed a transaction in which a Sears clerk sold him a bicycle. According to trial counsel, this failure to track down the Sears clerk was due to inadvertence and not believing his client. In finding ineffective assistance, the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit focused on this claim of lack of belief, concluding as follows.
Nor can we say that defense counsel's conclusory statement that he did not believe his client was an adequate basis for ignoring such an important lead. Indeed, if counsel had taken the few steps necessary to identify and interview the Sears clerk, he may have well formed a more favorable view of his client's veracity. There was nothing inherently suspect in the sales receipt. Whether the defendant had purchased the bicycle at Sears at a time when the state's witness placed him outside of Springfield was subject to independent verification.
Now, in its answer, the defense claims this same logic applies here, that whatever doubts Gutierrez might have had about Adnan or Asia McLean could have been quelled if she had simply picked up the phone and contacted Asia McLean and spoken to her for a few minutes.
Our listeners know that the origin story of Undisclosed is with Serial and the Adnan Syed case, but we couldn't have come this far unless me, Susan, and Colin had all been blogging on our own websites. That's why you need your own website, because you can do amazing things, especially with Squarespace. You can turn your cool idea into a new website, blog like us, publish content. You can even sell products and services of all kind. Now, Squarespace makes it easy because they have beautiful templates that are created by world-class designers. They have powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything online. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. They've got analytics to help you grow in real time. There's nothing to ever patch or upgrade, and they've got 24/7 award-winning support. So whether you have an issue to advocate for, whether you have thoughts you want to publish, whether you have work you want to showcase, well, you can make it yourself and make it stand out with a beautiful website by Squarespace. Check out squarespace.com/undisclosed for a completely free trial. And when you're ready to launch, all you have to do is use the offer code undisclosed to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Once more, head to squarespace.com/undisclosed for a free trial. Think it, dream it, make it with Squarespace. All of this would seem to make it pretty likely that the Court of Appeals denies cert, except for that pesky dissent by Judge Grafe. It's easy to see why the Court of Appeals has granted cert in 8 out of the last 10 reported Court of Special Appeals opinions in criminal cases with dissents. That's because the dissent sticks out like a sore thumb, and you can't just sweep it under the rug. It makes it seem like a different three-judge panel of the Court of Special Appeals could have very well have reached the opposite conclusion, and you can see Maryland's highest court wanting to provide a definitive answer. And so, while we'd like to say that it's likely the Court of Appeals will deny cert, it's probably a coin flip at best, and quite possibly likelier than not that cert is granted.
But there are two different issues in this case, and if indeed cert is granted on the alibi issue, the question is whether cross-cert will also be granted on the cell tower issue. In other words, if the Court of Appeals agrees to hear the state's appeal of the alibi issue, will it also agree to hear the defense's appeal of the cell tower issue? In its filing on May 29th, the defense argued that the Court of Special Appeals incorrectly found that Adnan had waived this issue and argued that this is an issue of public importance. And I gotta say, I agree strongly with the defense here. Unlike the alibi issue, which is really close to black letter and a very settled issue in many jurisdictions, the waiver issue is much more contentious and much more of interest to many defendants, not just in Maryland, but across the country. In terms of public importance, to my eye, it far outweighs anything having to do with Asia. And according to the defense, the Court of Special Appeals offered a new interpretation of the Court of Appeals' opinion in Curtis v. State, which itself was interpreting Maryland's post-conviction statute. And this seems like a pretty compelling argument because this interpretation will impact any future post-conviction cases with successive claims of ineffective assistance of counsel. And possibly this would apply to any successive claims brought in post-conviction. For instance, successive Brady claims could also fall under the standard. And under Judge Welch's interpretation, a defendant could claim in a first PCR proceeding that his trial counsel was ineffective based on failing to object to improper jury instructions, and then later, in a second PCR proceeding, claim that his trial counsel is ineffective in failing to retain an expert witness. But, under the Court of Special Appeals' interpretation, the defendant couldn't bring the second claim after bringing the first. And given that claims of ineffective assistance of counsel are quite popular in post-conviction proceedings, the Court of Special Appeals' interpretation will close the door on a lot of appeals. And it would seem like the Court of Appeals would want to have the final word on this issue.
So it seems like a safe bet that if the Court of Appeals allows the state to appeal, it will also allow the defense to appeal, but we'll have to wait and see. The state has 15 days from service of the defense filing to file its answer. If it's filed soon enough, everything will be distributed to the justices of the Court of Appeals at the court's June 19th conference for consideration at its July 26th conference. If it's not filed soon enough, everything will be distributed at the July 26th conference for consideration at its August conference. So, we should know by July or August whether the Court of Appeals has granted or denied cert. Again, if it denies cert, barring a successful Hail Mary to the U.S. Supreme Court, Adnan gets a new trial, a plea bargain, or drop charges. If the court grants cert, there will be oral arguments before the seven justices of the Court of Appeals, probably sometime this fall. These oral arguments will be live-streamed. And then finally, their opinion will come no later than August 31st, 2019, although it could come earlier. There's one final development in Adnan's case that is especially important. This year is an election year for the Baltimore City State's Attorney, the Chief Prosecutor for Baltimore City, and the person who will be deciding whether to re-prosecute Adnan if the order granting him a new trial is affirmed. The winner of the Democratic primary on June 26th will almost certainly become the next state's attorney, given the voting history of Baltimore City. And that primary features three candidates. The incumbent, Marilyn Mosby, who leads in the polls and who has not stated a position on Adnan's case. Third in the polls is none other than our prosecutor, Thiru Vignaraja, who continues to handle appeals in the case despite no longer working for the state attorney general's office. And if he becomes the state's attorney, it's near certain that he's not dropping the case against Adnan.
And it must be mentioned again that although I can't say it's never happened before, having a case of a pro bono prosecutor is extremely unusual, and you'd be hard-pressed to find many cases elsewhere that have similar setup, assuming you could find any at all. What's unknown is what extent Thiru Vignaraja currently impacts the appeals decision in Adnan's case, and who is actually making the call to file cert in this case. And given Thiru's campaign for the state's attorney's office, it's hard not to wonder how that might factor into here to his motivations to continue with the appeal and the state's decision to go along with it.
And then there's the final candidate, the third candidate, who is currently second in the polls. That's Ivan Bates.
I am tired of our city losing an entire generation. You know, I am tired of it being acceptable for so many to be killed and victimized in Baltimore when it's not acceptable anywhere else.
Ivan J. Bates has a legal career that spans both sides of the aisle. Bates is an Army veteran who started his career at the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office before spending the last 15 years as a defense attorney. Recently, he sat down with Amelia McDonald Perry, who co-hosted our Freddie Gray series, to do an article for Rolling Stone. And coincidentally, Bates was in the courtroom for Adnan's bail hearing back in 1999, and he recalls, quote, his eyes, because they looked like he was so afraid, like he didn't know what was going on. Bates didn't listen to Serial, but he has followed the case, noting that Adnan has a neutral alibi witness, Jay Wild's credibility is shot, and the cell tower evidence has been called into question. And that led Bates to tell Amelia, quote, that if elected, he would drop the case against Sayed. The two pieces of evidence that the case relied on have been shown to not be reliable in any way, shape, or form. There's not enough information to proceed.
And so we find ourselves in the familiar position of wondering whether everything in Adnan's case will be over very quickly or stretch on for another few years. If Bates wins the Democratic primary in June and the Court of Appeals denies cert in July or August, it's a safe bet that Adnan will be coming home soon and will never again be prosecuted for the murder of Haman Lee. But if Vignaraja or possibly Mosby wins the primary and the Court of Appeals grants cert, we could have another year and a half of appeals, followed by a re-prosecution that finally ends in another trial or a plea bargain as we stretch into 2020 and possibly even 2021. As always, we'll continue to update you on the status of Adnan's case. A big thank you to everybody who makes Undisclosed possible. Thank you to our sponsors who help us put on our episodes week after week. Thank you to Mital Delahan, our executive producer, for helping keep this ship afloat. Thank you to Rebecca Lavoie, our fantastic audio producer, and also the co-host and producer of a couple of my favorite podcasts, including Crime Writers On. Do not miss her podcast. Thank you to Baluki for our logo, to Christy for maintaining our website. Also, a big thank you to our listeners. Thanks for coming back week after week. Check us out and make sure to follow us online on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our handle is @UndisclosedPod. And please do not forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and rate us. Thanks so much. See you in a week.